Mace feels so good. Hank Hill is hooked on crack, and Jerry Seinfeld ought to be in pictures. This week on 30 2010.
30 2010. Every show, sometimes associated videos. 30 2010. The prizes are awaiting if we're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s. On 30 2010.
Welcome all. It's 30 2010 time. You know what that means. We're going to look back 30, 20, and 10 years ago into the past of pop culture. This week being October 27th through November 2nd. Sit down. Open three vortexes to 30, 20, and 10 years ago and join us. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Antista.
I'm Pink Eye Sufferer Dave Rudden.
Fatal Beauty Diana Goodman.
Matt Balls 3J.
And man, I've never seen a bigger letdown in the movies category this week, but
oh,
still a lot of fun TV stuff ahead, so stay tuned, everyone. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting so you receive the best possible matches. No wonder 80% of employees who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/10. That's the number 10. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. But let's begin this 30-2010 like we always do in 1987. Not much news to talk about. Fatal Attraction is still number one.
I'm sure some kid got a candy bar for Halloween with a razor in it. That's the big news this week.
Caramel apple.
Somebody pee on your child's Mr. Goodbar? News at 10.
And this is another one of those weeks. Like, I see every movie. I would see every movie I could get my hands on from the 80s and the 90s. I haven't seen any of these. Ever. Ever.
I've seen a couple of these.
No.
Not the ones you'd expect.
Never. I don't even know where to start because I usually try and list them in order of importance or magnitude.
They all seem equally unimportant.
Yeah. Hearts of Fire?
Yeah. This was a discovery. Mm-hmm. This is a weird one. I'm not even going to tell you who's in it. You can hit the trailer and see if you can you figure it out.
15 years ago, he walked away from the spotlight, the screaming fans, and the willing women.
Why'd you walk away from it? I mean, you were really big.
Now he's back to help a young girl make it to the top.
Hey, Billy, I can't do it without you, and I got to do it, Billy.
To teach a superstar how to stay there.
The bigger the trap.
King of the big stud.
I wanted him to sound like that.
Yeah.
But I did, that's Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan and Rupert Everett.
And Fiona.
In a movie together. And Fiona.
Written
Fiona
by Joe Esterhaus.
Wow.
Yeah. I feel like, this is something we can get into the 97 segment, but I feel like I really wish I had known about this in 97, because I could have used this as a linchpin in Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon, man. I did not know I could go from Bob Dylan straight to Rupert Everett. I thought I had to go through Kris Kristofferson.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought
up
that
game. Should maybe do an laser time about singers who got to star in movies, because it never works out. Yeah. From the Disorderlies to Bob Dylan, it just never works.
But that's how beloved Bob Dylan is. He gets all these chances to star in movies, and like everybody's like, this, we know this isn't good, right?
Yeah.
But we love Bob Dylan.
Let's not have him talk until halfway through the trailer.
I don't think they wanted to show us any lines from Bob Dylan.
No, apparently he's disowned this one, but not some of his other projects, which sound even fucking weirder.
Yeah.
And they always have amazing casts because everyone's like, sure, I'll show up for Bob Dylan.
For Bob Dylan.
You want me to do what?
And also, Slumber Party Massacre 2. I don't believe I've seen that one. I remember it being so
you
coveted.
Thought the massacre was over.
Did we just have, like, Sorority Massacre?
Yeah. I was going to say, was this...
Like, a couple weeks
we
ago.
We just had a movie like this.
Well, I'm so confused. I mean, the SEO on these is terrible.
I have tried to play down these anecdotes, even on Elm Street Nightmare, because Lizzie does not understand it. As a young boy in the 80s,
These were
horror
movies were your vessel for boobs. If like the
with a name like that, it was like guaranteed.
There were no content descriptors. It didn't as if it was R. Pretty much everything was there was nothing off limits. So it was. I can't imagine trying to convince like my dad or my friend's dad to rent me Henry in June, but I would could make the case for Friday the 13th and movies like Slumber Party Massacre, and that was too much for them. And I was only in it because like. Yeah, there'll be some horror kills, but I want to see boobs and panties.
Yeah, and this is like a for sure USA Up All Night kind of movie, where it's like, well, you'll get the boobs edited out, but it'll still be a fun time with plenty of gore and all that.
We also have Rampage starring Michael Biehn.
From William Friedkin, the director of The Exorcist.
I thought I'd seen it all. Nothing like this ever.
What happened?
A serial killer stalks an innocent town.
Good.
I'm sorry.
On the outside, he appears as the perfect boy next door. But on the inside, there's a murderer on a rampage.
Mom? That's where the title of the movie comes from.
That's the title. He wins the movie.
I thought we were going to see Michael Biehn turn into a giant gorilla.
I'm kind of sad that's what happened to John Connor.
No. Oh, that is John. No, that's not John Connor.
That's Kyle Reese. Sorry.
But Jesus. Yeah, I've never ever heard of this.
Generic as fuck, man.
But it's about a serial killer that then escapes to serial kill more.
Mm-hmm. That effect was cool, though.
It was pretty cool.
The brain
cool.
in the skull?
It was pretty cool. And, Jesus, I might have seen this on cable.
I have seen this, and I forgot what the impetus for the plot was. I remember Meatballs 3 Summer Job is about Patrick Dempsey working a summer job and trying to get laid. I had forgotten then another angle to it.
Is this the one with the alien?
I thought so too.
I think that's two.
But I can't find it anywhere to describe. Wait, does this one also have an alien?
It's
like they go to that well real fast.
And after sexy angel Sally Kellerman hits Heaven's Gate,
it's just the way I pictured it.
She's sent to Earth to earn her wings.
I think I've gone from horny to crazy.
What?
It was going to be tougher than I thought.
What the fuck?
I totally forgot that was a thing that he... That Patrick Dempsey has a guardian angel who's like a 40s starlet who's trying to coach him on how to lose his virginity.
Like, literally from heaven.
Who saw Meatballs and was like, all right, second one, sci-fi alien, third one, oh God, you devil.
I was clicking on the IMDb and the first picture is Patrick Dempsey reading a book.
How to pick up tons of horny girls. That's got to be in the... I know that's not high res, but that's got to be in the image for this episode.
Was he in a lot of stuff that young?
Yeah.
Well, it's also weird.
Like it's weird to me.
Can't Buy Me Love. We mentioned it last year.
Mr. McSteam Dreamy.
That's
nerd.
I'm used to him.
Yeah,
but, you know, we've had... Yeah, Can't Buy Me Love this year. We've had... what was that other one where he's romancing an older woman like a month ago? And I feel like this sat on a shelf, maybe, because he looks way younger than he did.
Hmm. He looks like 15.
It is credited, like, it's dated to 86. So it looks like it probably...
That's when it debuted in Telluride, Colorado, on the indie film circuit. Then it got a wide release.
Do you think that they, like...
The won some awards at Cannes, finally made it over
Do you think
here.
They made it, and then were like, it's set in a camp, let's just call it Meatballs?
Yeah.
I can see that happening.
Could
I can
be
totally
like
see that happening.
A sort of Die Hard situation where these are all novelizations we've just adapted.
Did we do that?
Why are we talking this much about
camp
Simon
movies?
Says.
But it's just, like, the cheapest set you can find.
Yeah, woods.
Yeah. And the woods...
A bunch of wooden houses.
You know how little you have to pay to rent a campground when it's not summer?
Yep.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
That's why Wet Hot American Summer was allowed to happen.
Yeah.
Those guys did... That movie doesn't have a budget.
Yeah.
They talk about it in that movie. Like, we had to film in the winter. It's wet and gross.
Yeah.
And last but maybe least, I'll let Diana tell us about it. Fatal Beauty.
My name's Detective Rizzoli. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions.
Rizzoli? Italian, isn't it?
This is Whoopi.
What kept you? Stopped to pick up a sailor?
Yeah, I almost had one too, but your mother beat me to him.
Oh, snap.
Get away, I'll carve you the steak tartare, I mean it.
She's got the moves. She's got the mouth.
This place is a real mess, you know where we can find a good maid?
You know, people like you are the reason abortion is legal.
Oh! For now. Why is this called Fatal Beauty?
Yeah, who's just saying that to? He looks familiar. Was that Joey Buttafuoco? That was.
I hate that they whitewashed her for the show Rizzoli and Isles. They
Fatal Beauty is the name of a killer drug that is on the streets, and cop Whoopi Goldberg is trying to stop it. Last week we had suspect with Cher not really playing a lawyer. This was actually written for Cher.
Wow, really?
Not really playing a cop. And so they just swapped in Whoopi Goldberg and just left in all the jokes about how she's Italian. That becomes a gag.
Wow, holy shit.
Yeah.
The maid joke seems more like a racist joke than an Italian,
right?
I mean, that might have been
added. Yeah, and they threw
added.
In some, like, huh, it's funny that a black person has an Italian name, I guess.
Yeah, Rizzoli. That's a funny
even
name for
Cher's
Whoopi Goldberg.
Not Italian either, so what the fuck?
I mean, her real name is Whoopi, so.
Yeah, okay. You know? Well, no, that's her. That's an adopted name.
It's weird.
Yeah, I think her name's Karen.
Oh, it's weird seeing Sam Elliott in the 80s still looking like he's 75 years old.
Dude,
he was 42 in this when this movie came out. He still looks like...
Yeah, but I was born 68.
I don't know, Whoopi, I work alone. I hope he's her partner. Sam Elliott and Whoopi Goldberg in a buddy cop comedy.
I think he's sort of the romantic
Wonderful.
So
hey, she married Ted Danson. Yeah. So that, or dated him, whatever.
Yeah, I've heard many bad movie websites.
Guys,
yeah, I've heard them talk about this. That it's a terrible movie, but you know, I'll just listen to Sam Elliott all day.
Yeah. Sam Elliott. The
God damn!
I heard they made me a wardrobe for this movie. I will not be requiring it. I woke up in this. I was also born in this.
I gotta be out of here by 5 o'clock and catch Designing Women.
Yeah. Hey, listen, could you just point a microphone at me where I talk about this salad dressing because it's gonna make me immense.
He's the ultimate winner of The Graduate, you know. He married Catherine Ross.
Well, that does wrap up TV this in 1987.
I am trying to seduce
October you. October 27th through November 2nd, veering into Thanksgiving. Sooner or later.
Television this week.
Yeah.
We're still, I believe we still have the...
Well, the World Series is in 97 and 07.
Okay.
It's just, maybe they didn't want to compete with Halloween itself.
Yeah. I want to talk about this stupid show I learned about that aired this week on the 28th, although it premiered a few weeks ago. It's called The Slap Maxwell Story.
Slap Maxwell. Is he a private eye or a hockey player?
He's both.
Okay.
Because he's
God.
A sports writer.
Sports writer.
So this show is a Tim Allen show that just happens to star Dabney Coleman. Because... Uh-huh. It's about, so Slap Maxwell, that's his nickname, Slap, I guess it comes from hockey. He's a sports writer, but it says, I took this from the IMDb synopsis, a sports writer of the old school, hard working, uncompromised type. But his type of writing doesn't fit well in the modern world. PC people don't like the way he talks about sports, man.
Oh,
it says in the thing, his wife wants to discover her own talents, which baffles Slap. So, like, his wife wants to do stuff, and it baffles him.
That's what they should have called this show, Baffle Slap.
Baffle Slap. Yeah. Baffle Slap. It sounds like Marvel vs. Capcom. Baffle Slap. And his son has no talent as a writer or a sports fan, but Slap wants him to be a sports writer like him. And it's Dabney Coleman, so it's probably like adorable, shitty dad.
Also having an affair with a young news writer.
Yes, I left that out. Sorry, he's having an affair with a young news writer.
What a catch!
I don't know why I love Dabney Coleman so much.
Everyone loves Dabney Coleman.
I love that.
Come on.
But man, people talk about Ted McGinley, but I think Dabney Coleman has a similar graveyard of TV roles. Where it's
Buffalo Bill, Madman of the People.
Yep.
You just looking up Dabney
Short
Coleman.
Short Time.
What's the Fox one he did? It was made fun of on a Simpsons Treehouse of Horror in one of the graves.
Drexel's Class.
Drexel's Class.
Oh my gosh!
Class.
How did you pull that?
I love, and I love Hot to Trot, and he has fake teeth in it. It's one of the worst things ever made, and I love it. I always have an eBay alert if I can find an actual unfolded one sheet of the Hot to Trot poster. It's going in this studio.
Which is John Candy standing next to a horse?
It's Bobcat Goldthwait. John Candy is the horse.
Oh, wait, I had it backwards. I thought Bobcat Goldthwait was the horse.
Man, we're less than a year away from talking about that movie on the show.
So happy.
This is for real true. Last night, to date this podcast, we recorded VGA last night. Mm-hmm. I tried to reference Hot to Trot and was too drunk and couldn't get it right.
Wow. That's just shy.
All the clips from the show are just silly, but this is actually a very adorable clip. It's from the next year when the Olympics were happening, but it's a little promo that I found cute and I wanted to play.
Why didn't you go to Calgary?
Canada?
Yeah, you know, the Olympics.
The paper wanted me to go and everything, but, you know, with ABC, you got everything right there,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's a crack.
I was too busy.
Mm-mm.
Passport was out of date.
Nope.
Well, the truth is, I didn't go up there because I didn't want to be away from you that long.
Well, that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
You bought that?
Slap, come on.
You can't
change Slap.
Because it's also like, it's promoting like, hey, on ABC, you can see all the Olympics, and also the show's going to get canceled within weeks.
Love Dabney Coleman.
But that show's silly. It's on YouTube. You can watch it.
Was that his wife or his the hot young.
I think it was the hot young lady who probably becomes, because he does, I believe in one of the episodes he gets divorced from the wife he's having troubles with. I read way too much about this show and I already forgot it all. But on the 30th, Dave, you pointed this out to me, DeBarge was on Punky Brewster, the episode Reading, Writing, and Rock and Roll.
The artist behind Who's Johnny from the Short Circuit soundtrack?
Who is Johnny?
Is DeBarge rock and roll? Aren't they more like funk or like pop party music? I don't know.
I think you could transition.
Not rock
late
and roll.
80s.
No.
That is that the episode? The episode titled "Reading, Writing, and Rock and Roll."
Yeah, it's about Punky isn't studying or some shit.
So DeBarge has to.
So DeBarge. Yeah, no, actually, I think that is like Punky doesn't want to read. DeBarge teaches her about the magic of reading, just like those posters you'd see of like Shaquille O'Neal, like. Yeah. Pick up a book. Like you never read a book, Shaquille O'Neal.
I love milk. Drink it.
He can't hold a book. His hands are too big. They crush the pages.
Here's a clip from that.
Guys, this is Betty. Betty, this is Chico and DeBarge.
Hi, Betty.
Hi, Betty.
Betty faints.
She'll be all right. She's a nurse.
Henry, why didn't you tell me reading was cool?
I guess I couldn't find the right words.
You know, Punky, your dad was all upset that you couldn't make it to the concert last night.
That makes two of us.
No problem. We deliver.
Free DeBarge! He brought the whole concert on cassette.
So then they play the tape and they just lip sync to the tape.
This is insane.
It's ridiculous.
And that is the blondest black man I have ever seen in my life.
Their hair is magnificent.
Everyone in this sketch looks like Jordan Peele from the Gremlins 2 sketch.
Oh, man.
Every member of DeBarge gets to name their own Gremlin.
I don't know why we've been talking about Punky Brewster so much, but I like being reminded of it because I could easily convince myself it never really happened because it's just one of the weirdest phenomena.
It's so weird because like half the episodes are like, oh, someone almost died.
Yeah.
And then half the other episodes are... Punky meets a celebrity.
Punky.
Punky almost does drugs.
Yeah, two things this week will tie into a Laser Time that will either have just come out or will come out the week this happens.
Please tell me what Monster Hits is.
So, on the 30th, on NBC, because this is pre-ABC being purchased by Disney.
Magical World of Disney.
Yeah, Disney's DTV Monster Hits airs on NBC, which is just one of those many, many things they did, which is just, they just repackaged footage of old shorts and put it to pop music. So just click on that link and we'll hear about some of the people on this one.
Disney's DTV Monster Hits features the music of Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder, the Eurythmics, ELO, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Rockwell, Ray Parker Jr., Daryl Hall, and Bobby Forrest Pickett. Now your host for tonight, the one who knows all, the magic mirror on the wall.
Good evening. Oh, good, she's not here. I mean, my former employer... Wicked Queen in Snow White, you know.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?
Geoffrey Jones, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, no.
Is that Geoffrey Jones?
Yes, it is.
Oh. Whoa.
So it's not just the music rights that will keep this off DVD.
No, it is. This is available on DVD.
Really?
I believe. On Disney DVD.
Which Ray Parker Jr. song do you think they did?
Yeah.
The opening was to... Tweedle Think Plunk and Boom? Something about...
Did you have a stroke?
No, it's a fucking award-winning cartoon.
It was all clips from like, which one's that, Melody Time?
It's the one where the birds are taught how music works.
Yeah.
And it's done in a very UPA style.
It's in one of those repackaged...
Forget I know a lot of shit about Disney animation. but I always love these things because, I don't know, like I grew up loving Disney cartoons from the 1940s and having no idea how old they were, and this is part of the reason. They constantly repackage them for me.
And they always use that same clip from, I think it's Mickey's 20th birthday or whatever, the one where he's got the cane and he's got the little hat and he's like dancing around for his friends.
Man, I actually really want to watch this now.
It's fun. I watched a bunch of clips from it.
I want to know what's in it.
It's music videos?
It's the Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
That's what they're called. They're called the Ghostbusters.
Here are Mickey, Goofy, and Donald, the world's first Ghostbusters. They're about to have a close encounter of the weird kind.
This is something I would do at home for myself.
They're fighting fighting the ghosts from Mickey Mania.
I mean, this is pretty much what like early YouTube was, which is just anime music videos. Yeah. Like,
yes, anime and Linkin Park together at last.
It's Goku and let the bodies hit the floor.
Oh my god, I have to stop talking about this, but I am watching this now. Hmm. Oh, this was such a big deal.
November 2nd, the premiere of Finders Keepers on Nickelodeon.
Maybe one of my first favorite game
really?
Shows. I love the concept of this.
So this show wasn't on when I was a kid. I learned about the show from the book Slimed, mm-hmm. and I had to look it up. I was like, what the hell is Finders Keepers? Because I knew you can't do that on television and
Nickelodeon
stuff.
Nickelodeon lost it. And it ended up going into syndication.
Yeah.
So it had other places.
I instantly maybe like, they felt like, that, this is awesome. Yes. I want to see more of this. And then it disappeared from Nickelodeon.
It has everything you want out of a game show. Yeah. J.D. Roth and a giant set.
A giant, huge, like, if you're thinking about 1986 game shows, not for kids.
Yeah.
They're boring as shit. Just like one piece and just one thing in a set is all boring and visually uninteresting. Yeah. And this was an entire house that a kid got to ransack.
Like,
it was, I Spy.
Yeah, it was all about finding objects in different rooms of a fake house.
Find your dad's porn collection. Go!
Culminating in a slide into a giant ball pit.
Yeah. Though this, I mean, man, for like so many kids' TV shows, kids' game shows, they're just delayed gratification. Like, that giant set, that's not until the last 5 minutes. That the obstacle course at the end of Double Dare, not to the last temple.
They're always disguising shitty trivia.
The hidden temple at the end of Legends of the Hidden Temple, you gotta wait for it.
It's hidden
stuff.
For a reason.
Yeah.
But I believe it's Nickelodeon's first stab at a game show. I don't think they hang their hat on that genre a lot anymore, but it would define Nickelodeon
for like 15 years
for a long time.
I was like, every time I went to Universal Studios, it was like, oh man, gonna be on a game show. I know it. Never did.
I
play Sonic.
I discovered that channel. They created digital cable and then came to the exact same conclusion. Everybody else says, oh god, we have to make stuff for this? Yeah. Fuck that. Yeah. Go to the archives. And there was just that channel that played wall to wall 15-year-old Disney game shows, and I was hooked. It was
Gas, right?
It was called Gas.
Games and sports.
And it's something else
now.
Because it
was Nick's Got Gas.
But here's a clip from the show.
If you can find the hamburger hidden in this picture, then you can win a run through our prize-filled house, where what you find is what you keep on Finders Keepers.
Who the hell's that guy? He ain't J.D. Roth.
I got chills. There is something so nostalgic about these old game shows and that specific announce guy.
Yeah. Was that Harvey?
It sounds like Harvey.
It probably wasn't.
Harvey, tell him what the wind... I don't want to go off another tangent, and I definitely don't want to go fall into a YouTube rabbit hole of old Nickelodeon game
That's
shows.
That's so easy to fall into. I do that. Or a couple years ago, just to mention, I'm sure this was covered in it, Splitsider did an amazing ongoing series of just interviewing people that had things to do with Nickelodeon game shows, including Nick Arcade, including this, including Legends of Hidden Temple,
so cool.
Double Dare, all those shows.
So cool. And I've always... If I'm ever really wealthy and can afford awful things, there's two things I want in my backyard. I want a Nautilus from the Disney World 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea ride. I want to turn it to an office. And I want at least one prop from the Double Dare obstacle course. I don't care which one. The giant nose with the glasses, the Sunday slide, the dumbass ball pit.
Do you know that Uncle Jesse has like a piece of the old Disneyland sign in his backyard? And if you know where his house is on Google Earth, you can see it.
Uncle Jesse?
Uncle Jesse.
Oh, John Stamos?
John Stamos.
Really?
Stamos! Yeah. I just realized something. 2 decades from now, a very famous Nickelodeon game show-related person will come up. We'll see who it is later in the show. Stick around.
I'm going to take a guess here in my head and keep it to myself. The answer at the end of the show.
You're right. It's the one who's still working in 2007.
That's the one. But that's it for TV. 1987 games, though, there's some notable information
here.
Yeah,
including the unofficial start of the 16-bit era, because the PC Engine releases in Japan... it would release 2 years later in America as the TurboGrafx-16.
Unfortunate names all around.
but I think TurboGrafx-16 at least sounds cooler.
I remember my spinster teacher yelling at me and saying, it's got more bits than the Nintendo Entertainment System.
But seeing as how this is 2 years before it comes out in America, they only had two launch games. One was Shanghai, which was a Mahjong game, because apparently every Japanese console release has to have a Mahjong game.
Yeah, look at the Japanese PSN.
Yes. And also Wonder Boy and Monster World, which is what Hudson become kind of synonymous with the Wonder Boy series.
Recently remade on the Switch.
Yeah, yes, it's really good.
And also Jack Black made a really good song about Wonder Boy, too. But
also,
yes,
there's that movie with Michael Douglas. Not that one.
Nope.
I like that movie.
The game.
Sure.
Yeah, but also, seeing as how this is the beginning of a new month, Wikipedia just randomly assigns a bunch of games to November, and nowhere is there an actual date for any of these. So, the NES releases of November 1987 include Goonies 2, Gotcha, Karate Kid, oh, Kid Nicky Radical Ninja, Star Force, Super Pitfall, and Top Gun.
A lot of
games that I put plenty of hours into.
So, I haven't been
actually
able...
all of the movie ones.
So Goonies got a sequel in video games.
Dude, I am convinced that they were going to make a movie because it is a poster that is basically
with
worthy.
The kids on it.
Yeah, and it's like it is really professionally done.
It's the sequel
to a video game.
To a video game that did not come here.
Yes.
Japan has a Goonies game that we didn't get.
But that's
an arcade
game.
And
they're both awful.
Yeah.
They are both awful games. But as a little kid with no internet, I love the Goonies, and you see the box for Goonies 2 and you just assume, did I miss something?
Yeah.
I go into the video store. Yeah. Is there a Goonies 2? And like, I don't think so.
It's about,
there's no way to check.
So this time around, Mikey has to save all of the Goonies as well as a mermaid. Mm-hmm. And it's a weird, incomprehensible game, especially back then. Where, like, you don't know which rooms to take. And
it's a Metroidvania.
Yeah, and, like, you go into rooms, and sometimes there's an old man, and if you hit him, he says, ouch, what do you do? Some rooms have a Konami man in there. Some rooms have an Eskimo. It's so weird.
It's so
actually
crazy.
And to head off the comments, now that I think about it, we might have gotten the arcade Goonies. It might have come here in limited quantities and been in, like, a 7-Eleven.
I remember
something.
Playing it on, like NES knockoff cartridges, like those 50-in-1, and it's like, oh, wow, Goonies. Yeah. There was a Goonies 1 game?
It's a Famicom game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Karate Kid, we played through that in a stream and it only took like 30 minutes, but I swear as a kid, there's one stage where you're in a storm and it is one of my most infuriating levels ever.
It's
like, that's up there with the TMNT seaweed level, like where it's just like, this is so frustrating and I have, it's only four levels, but it's because the third level is so difficult that I rarely beat that game.
There's a really good Friday the 13th game out. Yeah. I really think there's a good pitch. You can't make another Goonies movie, but you can assemble almost all of that cast and make a really kick-ass video game if you wanted to.
But then there's also Top Gun, another game I never beat because I could never fucking land the plane.
Diana, if you don't know this game, it's notoriously awful and obtuse. Mm-hmm. And you can be the biggest fan of a movie in the world and still subject yourself to a bad game. But this is what most people find this impossible.
I mean, Top Gun should really be a volleyball game.
But, you need the power glove. That's what Angry Video Game Nerd did.
And, well, speaking of Top Gun, we also streamed the PS1 Top Gun with the, what's his face?
Principal checks
Strickland.
Your body can't catch. Yeah.
But I included the commercial for Top Gun.
Gentlemen, this is it. There's no room for second best. It's the Top Gun video game by Konami. You can punch Top Gun into your Nintendo Entertainment System and push your F-14 to the edge of the envelope. Line up bogeys, take your best shots, and after each mission, land your bird on the narrow deck of a Navy flat.
No, you can't.
Top Gun, the video game. This is your dream shot.
I gotta gift that kid at the end. The B-grade Val Kilmer doing the salute. Yeah. Thumbs up in like 3 seconds. Really,
it's so close to being as awesome as that kid giving thumbs up to the whole internet. But it's almost there. That
I think the problem
is so close to the theme song too. But it is definitely not.
I think the reason I wasn't doing so good at that game is I didn't punch it into my system like
punch
I said.
Into your system.
They said punch it in your system while he's delicately putting it in and clicking it down. I always just figured Afterburner was the Top Gun game.
Yeah. I think that's what it was probably based on.
I mean, it was the way better one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
it
like
wasn't on
the Nintendo. When you had to land your plane, I think that there was maybe a translation error because it would tell you to go up when you're supposed to go down.
Mm.
Really confusing, and I never was able to do it, so I never got past the first level.
Well, that wraps up the games, and we got to get into the music of 1987, October 27th through November 2nd. Bad by Michael Jackson is number one. That took a while.
It took a couple weeks, yeah.
But we also have some other new releases. Blues for Salvador by Carlos Santana. Got Any Gum by Joe Walsh. And,
not David Letterman.
And George Michael's Faith, which includes One More Try, Father Figure, and the song we will be closing out with, I Want Your Sex.
You had a whole Laser Time episode about controversial songs, and you did not cover this.
Did we not cover any George Michael?
You did not cover I Want Your Sex, which was a huge thing, because it was the lead single that came out before the album came out, and a lot of radio stations were like, we're not going to play this. And then MTV was like, we're not sure we're going to play this video, because it's got like a lady in lingerie, and he's using lipstick to write monogamy on her.
I want to mention too about Bad. In speaking of anniversaries, because that's what the show's about. In 2013, Spike Lee made a documentary about the making of the Bad album called Bad 25, and it's awesome. He talks to everyone. It's great. You should watch it. It's hard to find because it aired on TV, and then I don't think was released anywhere else, like a home video. But you can find it.
All right. Well, we will close out with George Michael's "I Want Your Sex." I had to be as the sexy as possible reading that.
Want your sex?
I like your sex.
But once we're done with your sex, we will be back in 1997. Stay tuned, people. Folks know 302010 is a show all about celebrating talent. And you know who understands talent? ZipRecruiter. If you or your business are in need of great talent and don't want to waste time, ZipRecruiter has the right tools, smarter tools, to help you find the right job candidate quickly and easily. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you, it finds them. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Nothing. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/10. That's the number 10, a 1 and a 0, and post your jobs for free. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Guys, you know we like to talk a lot about anniversaries here on 302010.
Dude.
But you know, we also sometimes write about anniversaries on lasertimepodcast.com.
That's true.
Thanks to the wonderful folks in the Lasertime community on Facebook. We have a lot of user-created articles. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, we put pen to paper or finger to keyboard.
You ranked all the Punch-Out cast members for the 30th anniversary. I'm going to say I wrote about Freddy Krueger's coolest kills in honor of the 30th anniversary of Dream Warriors.
Or the blank week anniversary of an Elm Street Nightmare.
Yeah.
But one that is so notable because it's a double anniversary. Mm. George Weekly wrote an article about the X-Men animated series, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary of the premiere this month. Okay. And last month, if you remember, we talked about the finale. So, yeah, this is a show that is 20 and 25 years old in 2017. So George Weekly wrote about how the show got off to a rocky start before it became like the institution that everyone knows.
Instantly hooked. I've never seen another cartoon show kill a character.
But the other major article I want to highlight this week is about Robert Loggia.
Robert Loggia.
Of course. What I'm going to say is the 2-week anniversary of Loggia time.
Yeah.
Aaron Chatos wrote an article about the weirdest replies to Robert Loggia's Minute Maid commercial on YouTube. He's picked out some real quirkers, and you're going to love reading about it. And, if you want just a little bit more Loggia love, Aaron Chatos has the article for
That's
you.
True. And a light plug, even though we may have done it last time, Super Mario Land turned 25, six gold coins. It also means it's Wario's 25th birthday, and Greg Mello did a fantastic comic. And Round the Wheel wrote up an awesome article about the 8 weirdest things in Super Mario Land 2.
Yes,
one of the most fun games locked to a black and white 120p screen.
Yeah, and much like how Diana sometimes goes out of the 302010 spectrum for Classic Corner. Yeah, sometimes we're going to talk about 5th anniversaries, 25th anniversaries here.
On
but,
the side,
yeah. Yeah, because...
not here.
No, never
no,
here.
No, no, no.
Not on 302010.
Let's get back to anniversaries that are only 30, 20, and 10 years old.
Let's begin, bring this BS to an end. Come on. Bad boy. Yeah. You make me feel so good.
Bad, you make me feel so good. And you know you make me feel so good.
That's what
Yes, and that would be Mace's Feel So Good. I never remember the name of the song.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mace.
Nobody seems more relaxed than Mace.
I'm going to finish this rap after I take
this album was fucking huge, though.
Yeah.
This was so big, and then, like, nothing else from Mace after that. I'm pretty sure he made his entire living in the 1 year this album was out. Harlem World, baby. We're our 1997 people. That's why Mace is bringing us in and not George Michael. But there are also new releases from the Deftones, who Around the Fur is out. The Fury of the Aquabats.
Hell yeah.
By the Aquabats.
I'm not sure. I'll have to check that. Harlem World by Mace. Jugulator. Is that really the word? Jugulator?
Yeah.
By Judas Priest. Slipstitch and Pass by Fish. Zerika by The Flaming Lips, and Impossible Princess by Kylie Minogue.
Impossible Princess is also a great anime.
And none of them can topple Candle in the Wind by Elton John. 1997 version.
For like a month or two.
Ooh, and a tiny bit of news. This was real exciting in my neck of the woods because we didn't have a baseball team in Florida forever. We had to be Braves fans because they were the closest. On the 27th, the Florida Marlins win their first World Series after four seasons, the quickest championship for an MLB team.
Yeah, because most expansion teams in baseball history.
How the Rockies doing?
They did make the World Series once. So actually, in the next segment, we'll be talking about it. But usually it takes a while for new franchises to even become winning teams. Like the Mets, they famously lost 120 games in their first season. They went 40-120. And it took them 7 years. And at that point, they were the quickest team to go from expansion to championship. But it only took the Florida Marlins 4 years. And I believe the Diamondbacks may have broken this record. Mm. But I don't have the numbers handy, so please don't yell angry comments.
I thought that was always expected, the expansion teams to do poorly.
Yeah, because
the first couple years
they gotta build up.
They basically, how expansion teams start is that they take a player from every team, and it's usually like the worst player. Like they, because it's only unprotected players that they can choose from.
Keanu Reeves should make a movie about that.
Yes, but it only took them 4 years. But it's a weird pattern for the Marlins. They did this twice where they quickly bought a lot of players and won the World Series, but I guess they usually wouldn't have the attendance to pay for all those players, so they would immediately like sell them off over during the off season and then fail the next season. So it's like that's why I feel like the Florida Marlins don't have like a really devoted fan base, because they keep just selling off players once they get good.
It's funny. I was talking at work with my boss, and we were talking about how we still think of all these teams that, you know, expanded in the 90s. Yeah. We still think of them as new teams and realize it's so easy. You can tell what teams were added in the 90s because they all have
extreme.
They all have turquoise as one of their colors.
Oh.
Always.
Turquoise and purple.
Yeah, like, turquoise and purple.
What other teams?
Mighty
really
Ducks.
Have
Carolina Panthers.
Marlins. Yeah. Carolina Panthers of turquoise. Diamondbacks? Diamondbacks have turquoise? I don't really.
The Charlotte Hornets?
What color is it, diamond?
Did that have to do with that?
Sure.
This is how little we know about sports.
Yeah.
But in other news, Jesus.
Going from hits to shakes.
No.
Oh, my God.
Here we go. On Halloween Eve, au pair Louise Woodward, 19 years old, is convicted of second-degree murder after shaking a baby to death, which was reduced on an appeal to involuntary manslaughter a few weeks later.
Yeah.
And this is, I don't remember hearing that beforehand, but literally commercials, never, ever shake a baby.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That never occurred to me.
No, don't shake the baby.
I was in the UK, so this was gigantic news. People asking me how our justice system works, and me going,
You were like the liaison to
everybody,
the whole country.
Yeah, like not understanding, wait, she gets to appeal right away.
You're on top of the pops explaining it.
And now from America. Hi! all kinds of stuff about, you know, especially over there, a lot of people thought, oh, she couldn't have shaken that baby, and it must have had some other problems because she was the au pair for two doctors, and it's like, well, these injuries came from before, and how come the parents didn't notice it? Blah, 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 and it's just, you know, it just becomes scandal sheet garbage, and it's sad because, you know, a baby died, and a girl got her life fucked up, and it was sort of like, oh, your tabloids suck even worse than ours.
It sucks.
We don't have naked ladies in our tabloids.
One more thing I can't do with my future children, play Samba de Amigo. so sad. But for movies of 97, I Know What You Did Last Summer is still numero uno at the box office. Mm. Not worth it. I'm tired of seeing it there. Mm. Jesus, somebody knocked that thing out.
But we have all these great movies coming out.
It's not going to be any of these
fucking films.
I'm going
to take a wild
films.
Guess and assume that the week after Halloween, it's not going to be the number one movie.
I got it. This doesn't make... I have to ask the question. Switchback with Dennis Quaid, Danny Glover, Jared Leto, Ted Levine.
I think I saw them at Warped Tour last year.
Mm-hmm. William Fichtner and Arlie Ermey, the Sergeant Hartman.
Yep.
What's a good Dennis Quaid movie?
What's the one where he makes
exactly
the radio one with the time travel
frequency.
I love that movie
with not Keanu Reeves.
Yeah,
Inner Space.
Yeah. Oh yeah, hell yeah, that movie's great.
Isn't he in some baseball movie?
Anytime he's in a science movie,
he's in 10 baseball movies.
Yeah.
Is No Way Out good?
He's not in No Way Out.
Isn't
No
he?
Man?
That's
no,
Costner.
Oh, I'm thinking Kevin Costner.
But I keep seeing him pop up in all these movies and like, dude, does anybody? Why is Dennis Quaid a star? How did this happen?
He's likable.
He's white.
Fine, let's see this from Switchback.
Tall and white.
Special Agent Frank LaCrosse has 3 days.
No prints, no weapon, no witnesses.
To uncover the clues.
To 18.
18 victims, say 18th of February.
Day after tomorrow.
And follow the trail.
State Patrol found his car near a railroad trestle.
I got you, Doc.
Seems he lost control while chasing a train.
Okay, yes, it's a murder. Must solve. Mm. I think I could make the case that Randy Quaid has been in more great movies than Dennis.
Yeah,
Quaid.
He's in Christmas Vacation.
You probably can. Last Detail, but Breaking Away.
Breaking Away.
Dennis Quaid.
That's right. Breaking Away is fucking amazing.
Yeah. So this is the directorial debut of Jeb Stuart, the dude who wrote Die Hard.
Really?
Oh. And it does have a really cool cast. And every review was like, "This was way too complicated, and I'm not feeling it."
Yeah, just have him say yippee-ki-yay. That's it. That's all you need.
I'm looking at Dennis Quaid's IMDb. His four most popular movies. The Day After Tomorrow,
no.
Vantage Point, Pandorum,
Chris,
Frequency.
Chris, what did Dennis Quaid do to you?
I don't know. And then I look below.
You have it out for this guy.
I didn't know. I loved the People versus O.J. Simpson show. I didn't know they were into a third season, and let alone that Dennis Quaid is playing George W. Bush and whatever the fuck that story is about.
Oh, nice. I think it's Katrina.
And in that trailer, Arlie Ermey said, Day After Tomorrow. It's like he was letting him know.
But an equally humdrum theatrical releases.
It's a great cast.
Richard Gere movie with Bai Ling and Bradley Whitford, Red Corner.
In America, he would know his rights.
If you plead not guilty, you will be shot within a week, and the cost of the bullet will be billed to your family.
But here, justice doesn't translate.
No! You believe me or not?
This should be called Richard Gere Movie Part 4. God damn.
Well,
anybody Rocket Man in this movie?
Well, yeah, he has a very specific reason because he was very, very into Tibetan freedom, mm-hmm, so he's mm-hmm. super down to make a movie where the Chinese look bad. This would never get made today.
No, especially
when... also, Bai Ling could act.
Yeah, wow. That is weird.
She wasn't just a crazy person.
Yeah.
I don't think I knew anything about
her. All I know is she was in a Star Wars deleted scene mm-hmm. and the worst episode of Lost.
Yeah.
And Crank, right? Isn't she in the Crank?
Yeah, she gets her tits shot off.
What?
Yeah, it totally happens.
Wow. What a career.
And then last but not, but maybe least, I'll let Diane explain, Perdita Durango, a.k.a. Dance of the Devil.
The two characters from 101 Dalmatians.
Pongo and Perdita in this played by Javier Bardem and Rosie Perez. this is actually a good trailer. I'm guessing it's in Spanish.
No, it's not.
Okay.
Romeo Santero, drug dealer, bank robber, scumbag.
There's a woman involved in it?
Perdita Durango. She's as dangerous as he is. It's not going to take her long to break the law.
James Gandolfini?
Yeah.
Wow. This movie looks amazing.
I want to see this.
The thinnest I've ever seen James Gandolfini.
I know. The reviews are all sort of like, it's okay, but they're like, it's sort of like Natural Born Killers in that they're like two robbers on the run together. And it's like, I do kind of want to watch this.
Where's Rosie Perez?
I
miss her so much.
I will give $1 to anybody here who can name the song in that trailer, the artist and the song.
Fatboy Slim?
No.
Familiar.
It's Beck? Not, no. This is never going to happen.
No?
Really?
No.
I heard it. I'm
Be
like...
Camel Walk. Walk like a camel.
Oh.
By Southern Culture on the Skids.
Wow.
It's one of the most 90s songs in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if you want Captain's Wife first.
If you want to see the stars of The Sopranos and No Country for Old Men looking so weird, here's their movie.
Wow.
Yeah, that's even weirder hair than his door hair in No Country for Old Men.
It is really weird hair. But I mean, again, we're still into Tarantino knockoffs and stuff. This looks like a movie that Robert Rodriguez should have made.
It looks like a Robert Rodriguez knockoff.
It's not him.
Wow.
No, it's a different guy.
Wow, but moving out of movies, we got to go to the TV of 1997, and this is where it gets exciting.
Yeah. This is a big week for TV. Mm-hmm. So on October 27th, 1997, The Daily Show with Craig Kilborn airs, and we just talked about South Park premiering. Mm-hmm. Matt Stone and Trey Parker were on The Daily Show, of course, another show on the network, and he interviewed me, did the five questions, which is a thing Craig Kilborn used to do.
I love the five questions.
Let's hear their five questions.
If you name five of the
the 7 states that border Colorado. Need 5.
Arizona.
Correct.
New Mexico.
Yes.
Utah.
Yes.
Oklahoma.
Yes.
Kansas.
Correct. Very
Wyoming.
Nice. Yeah, you know. Feel free to participate.
I was saying, telling them off.
What was the first X-rated cartoon?
Fritz the Cat.
Yes.
The Cat,
yeah. You're doing very well. Thank you. Rob and Fab were the front men for what group?
Milli Vanilli.
Very good.
Well, I don't know anything.
Let's see if you can answer one.
All right.
The true meaning of Christmas, celebrating the birth of Jesus or grabbing the goodies from Santa?
Birth of Jesus.
Yes, oh. That is correct. By the way, currently 4 out of 4, just like.
Okay.
And finally, do you have to hang out with George Clooney now that he's helped you out? Or?
He tries to come by the office now and again. He wants more voices now that he's done the gay dog. But
yeah.
That's it. He's had his day. He's done.
Man, Craig Kilborn giving guff to Matt Stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's more popular now?
I did love him as a host of that show. It was a way different thing. Than Jon Stewart.
Who's not political.
But it was, I don't know, The Daily Show. When did it premiere this year?
No, yeah, it was 96.
96,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And then really ramped up. Like, Jon Stewart takes it over, what, a year after this?
2 years later, yeah.
2 years later, and then Indecision 2000 is when the world is like, okay, this is where we get our news now from funny white dudes.
Jon Stewart said I don't want to go do field pieces making fun of neighbors who are having a zoning dispute.
Though I do love like the Beth Littleford interviews.
Oh, yeah.
Those are great.
But the Daily Show started having a voice it started to take sides and take a stance on political issues.
I do miss the 5 questions. Though.
Yeah. But I do miss the wackiness of this era where it was apolitical.
They talk about earlier in that clip, they talk about what a success South Park is. Yeah. And Craig Kilborn actually says something funny where he says like, you're where all the money is going. You guys in Viva Variety. And which is like, whoa, is Viva Variety like a high budget show for Comedy Central all the time? Yeah. I guess so.
That really did look like an undecorated set with a couple of lights.
Squirrel nut zippers do not come cheap. But speaking of Parker and Stone, there was also a new South Park this week. A kind of memorable one, the episode Pink Eye, where the town starts turning into zombies and it's being misdiagnosed as Pink Eye. And what is it? I think they all have like Worcester sauce or something that also turns them into zombies.
Yeah.
I forget.
The Spooky Vision?
Yeah, no, that's the next scene.
Okay.
With Barbara Streisand as Borders on the side of the screen. But yeah, so the kids are all killing zombies, and here's a scene where Chef turns into a zombie.
Okay, Chef, dial the hotline number. Chef? Chef!
I'm gonna make love, even when I'm dead. My body might get cold, but it's always hot in my bed.
Jesus Christ.
So,
this show has been on so long.
If you
long.
Want to, you can fuck Isaac Hayes' corpse.
We
I
talked
guess,
about 302010 like last year about Isaac Hayes' death.
Yeah.
That's over 10 years old.
This is the episode where. Is this the one where Cartman's dressed like Hitler?
And then the principal dresses him up as a ghost, but that costume looks like
the
a Klansman.
The head is too pointy.
Yeah. And yeah, everyone in the school is dressed up as Chewbacca because this was when they were doing the re releases of all the Star Wars movies.
Mm.
And then next on the 28th,
wow.
So a show premiered a couple weeks ago, an episode of it just aired, show Hiller and Diller.
I remember this.
You remember this?
I do.
Kevin Nealon and Richard Lewis play comedy writers with troublesome kids.
I don't want them to have kids. I just want them to have adult conversations. I would love that.
Yeah. They made 16 episodes. 4 of them were unaired. I really only included this, because it's a stupid show, but also because, I just wrote an article that's probably up by now about challenged by Chris, I ranked every one season TGIF show, and one of them, I might have been number one on my list, I forget, is another show about comedy writers, and I just go off in the thing about like how stupid it is that people keep writing shows about comedy writers.
Hey, TGIF, don't make that challenge for yourself.
Yeah. Nobody wants to see a show about comedy writers.
Yes.
It never works. Like, what's the most successful one?
30 Rock.
Yeah, 30 Rock. That's the only one that worked, and that's not a show about comedy writers.
Yeah.
Like,
is this Kevin Nealon's most prominent role?
Weeds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Weeds. I forget he did that.
I think he had a TBS show a couple years ago.
It's Richard Lewis's third most prominent sitcom role, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I forget the name of it.
The one with Jamie Lee Curtis?
No.
Fourth.
A
that
sitcom?
Happened. Yes. Yes, Richard Lewis and Jamie Lee Curtis had a sitcom early 90s. We'll eventually get there.
No, yet there was. I was thinking the sitcom. I think pretty sure it was Fox, where Don Rickles was his dad.
Right.
And it was supposed
to
be really. And I only remember one joke from it. Like Don Rickles is in a robe, and he somebody walks in like, "Ugh, God, close your robes." That reminds me, I need to buy Raisin. And I'm like, "Fox, Fox, Fox, yeah, it's made a ball joke." Anyways, and
then on the same day, the 28th, the Frasier Halloween Part 1 airs, where Niles hosts a Halloween party where everyone dresses as literary characters.
I love this one.
This is a great episode and has one of my favorite Frasier jokes ever, which is a literary joke where, Roz.
Taste the back of me hand, you filthy wench, whatever it was he keeps repeating.
No,
you
but
an
that's...
interpreter.
So Roz thinks she's pregnant. And she shows up to this party, and she's wearing, like, basically, like, leather and, like, bondage gear. And then this joke happens.
Wow, Roz, don't you look smashing? What an interesting costume. Who are you?
I'm O, from the story of O.
Oh.
That's it. They do that joke, like, five times.
Frasier.
And then the same night, the 28th, another Halloween episode, Home Improvement, A Night to Dismember airs, which we just discussed on Laser
Time.
Yeah,
we discussed, go way to depth on that, but a show, an episode that truly scared you?
Yeah, this episode messed
it's
me
pretty
up
dark.
As a kid.
Yeah.
It's really dark.
It's pretty dark.
Weirdly, like, the youngest kid went goth, which I never knew happened on that show.
Oh, yeah, that was like a big thing. Yeah. Because they were like, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, he's already got one foot out the door.
Oh my God, yes.
He already made I'll Be Home for Christmas, so we can't hold on. No, that wasn't, Jungle to Jungle, so he's going to get out of here any moment.
Those scenes he's in, he's like barely like.
I love those sequences.
Like he's got one foot out the door like, oh yeah, I can't believe that my brother's doing this. Bye.
I'm going to college.
All the JTT scenes in that episode are like, there is no human cast member around you. You came in on a Saturday. When no one else was here and shot these scenes.
He jumps on to Zachary Ty Bryant's back and rides
him around.
But
there's a bunch of scenes like that, like, why is he so isolated from the rest of the family? Like,
what I love
no one's
him,
in this shot.
I think he's doing good work in those clips we watch, but I think it's funny that everyone else is like dressed to their character and he's wearing like a hot 90s shirt with his like chest exposed and little Matt learned some stuff about himself watching Home Improvement.
Oh, this is awful.
So on the November 2nd, the ABC TV movie, also I believe on Wonderful World of Disney, it premiered. Cinderella, starring Brandy, Whitney Houston, Jason Alexander, and Bernadette Peters.
Oh,
it was
it
was the race flipped Cinderella because that was a cool thing to do in the 90s and 2000s. Was like, let's remake dumb old white people stuff and like put cool black people in.
Well,
it's
literally always Brandy.
it was always Brandy.
But what's Jason Alexander doing there?
He is the assistant to the prince.
Okay,
so he's the guy
he's
like
the fat mouse.
Okay,
because he's a big
he's the
Broadway.
Pumpkin they ride in.
He's a big. He's a big Broadway star, so they always put him in anything musical like
I'm
that.
A pumpkin, Jerry. I don't like being a pumpkin.
And I didn't include a clip from the show. I included a clip from like a special feature that they aired because the show isn't on DVD, so I don't know. I guess this aired on ABC alongside.
I'm trying to pull it up on IMDb and it's not working.
It seems like the kind of thing they would have released to DVD eventually.
I'm sure it's
VHS
on VHS
at this point.
It's probably on VHS.
Someone who probably had a lot more energy and really was Cinderella to me, should play the part, and I suggested Brandy.
She called me one day all hype. I was like, what's going on, Whitney? And she's like, I got this project. Deborah and I have this project, and we want you to do this movie called Cinderella. We want you to play Cinderella. And I said, I thought you were gonna be Cinderella. She's like,
I'm 33 now. I'm not quite feeling like Cinderella.
No, honey, I'm not gonna be.
Wow, she's playing the Angela Lansbury role at 33.
So they got.
And I know it's not Angela Lansbury.
They clearly got Whitney, and we're like, do you want to be in this movie? And she was like,
no.
You're not gonna give me for more than 3 days. So let's get. So then, she recommended Brandy. Apparently, that's cool.
Yeah, I like her costume.
Yeah,
so, I mean her.
I think that's just how she was dressed that day.
It could be. I mean, but in these shots, like, she's got, you know, sort of tight curl, like this big halo of like lion curls, and there's like gold glitter in there, and she's got this like gold beaded gown or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, damn, she looked good.
And Brandy's clearly super excited. Like, she's full of energy, and we all do. And what's the timeline of Brandy's, of the show Brandy?
Moesha?
Wasn't there, didn't she have her own show too?
Moesha.
Yeah.
Didn't she have a show called Brandy?
Not
I thought there was.
But, well, looking at other sitcoms of this week, I was wondering, like, oh, well, what episode of Seinfeld was this week? not a classic by name. It's the episode of The Junk Mail, but it has two of my favorite guest starring turns. One is Toby Huss as The Wiz.
I'm The Wiz.
Oh, I'm the Wiz.
Which,
nobody beats me.
And I love that because it's so New York, because Nobody Beats The Wiz is an actual chain.
Yeah.
They never
which
had The Wiz.
I learned
like,
years, I think I learned walking down the street in New York and go, what the, oh my God.
I love, yeah. Great, I love the jingle for that store is great. Mm. Nobody yeah. beats The Wiz. Ain't nobody gonna beat The Wiz. There was no actual Wiz, okay? But that was also the episode with Dana Gould as
Fragile Frankie Merman.
Yes, Jerry's friend from camp who cries
who
all the
cries.
Time.
The Summer George, right?
Yes. And also in that episode, George tries to date his cousin to make his parents angry, and his cousin's into it.
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Yes.
That is a notable
Pornhub
episode.
Pornhub sidebar, the Seinfeld episode.
And so is this King of the Hill episode.
This King of the... Yeah, so we're now talking about King of the Hill 2 weeks in a row, just because this episode's such a great classic. We're only in season two, mm-hmm. and season one was only like 12 episodes, mm-hmm. so this is like episode like 17. So we already had like... within 20 episodes, a bunch of classic episodes, including this one, Jumpin' Crack Bass, where Hank tries to buy a miracle bait. He accidentally buys crack, and it's a great bait and like works, except all the fish build up a tolerance to crack, so they have to find harder crack to use as bait. And here's a clip of Hank Hill buying crack.
Well, I got 20.
20 gets you all the bait you need, Jack. Rock on.
Huh, freshness jars.
Okay.
Sure don't.
He's trying, because like, it's
I
somebody...
love it when he falls ass backwards and CD into CD modernity.
Yeah. It comes to a real head at the peak of the show when he becomes a pimp, right?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Alabaster. I mean, I cannot wait till we talk about that episode.
I love Hank Hill. Jesus Christ.
How many times has Snoop Dogg played a white guy? I feel like it's a lot, right?
Oh, that was Snoop Dogg?
Yeah. Snoop Dogg's yeah. not there. He's the pimp. He's Alabaster.
Oh, right.
That's it for TV this week. That's a lot of cool stuff.
It really
that's
is.
Yeah. That makes up for the movies. They were boring.
The movies sucked, but the
we
games.
We got good ones coming up.
Holy crap! What a week for games. But I think this
crazy.
Is it. Like just the way that Wikipedia like lists release dates for games. Games didn't unless they were like really big releases. I don't think they had a designated date, so a lot of these are just listed as October 31st or November 1st.
Well,
but I
do know that, like, back in these days, Sony was really good about hitting the November release dates. Like, let's get all this shit out for holiday purchases.
And I mean, look, this is just like a murderer's row of good games, not Castlevania, Final Fantasy level, but these are a lot of good games in here, and also a lot of stinkers.
They were all of these have the distinction of being so amazing at the time, but hold up like garbage.
Yeah. well, let's start with N64, which only had two games because. This is the Nintendo 64, and everything's mm-hmm. a slow trickle there. Mm-hmm. Duke Nukem 64 mm-hmm. and Madden 64. And Madden 64 is notable. I believe this is one of the few Maddens where they didn't get the NFL license. They only had the NFL players license. So you would play as New York, and it would be the Giants, and it would have all the Giants players, but they wouldn't be the New York Giants. They would just be New York, and they would have the same colors, but no logos anywhere. No.
But also, four controllers.
Didn't come up with fake names for them. So
no,
like,
no.
The New York... Gargantuan.
No,
tall people.
It would just be New York, like American Conference and the other conference. I suck at no. I hate football. Okay, let me just get that off my chest right now. But PS1, ton of games: Tomb Raider 2, Time Crisis with the Gun Con.
We loved it.
Star Wars: Masters of Terrakazi,
the fighting game.
Yes, which we streamed and is crap. Jet Moto 2, Ghost in the Shell, Fighting Force, Cool Borders 2. Colony Wars, which is an underrated game. Caesar's Palace, Bloody Roar.
Animal fighting game?
Wait, what is Caesar's Palace?
It's just
it's like a casino.
Yeah,
that's
and there was literally one 2 weeks ago, and that one had Adam West, so I don't know why do you get Caesar's Palace?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bloody Roar, not a great fighting game, but just a fighting game with where you could turn into crazy animals.
The sequel on GameCube is fantastic.
And speaking of crazy animals, we also have Crash Bandicoot 2, Cortex Strikes Back. Pinnacle.
The game everybody owned, but we got to close out 1997. But stay tuned, people. We will come back into 2007 in just a moment.
Mr. Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Nyanna's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And for the week of October 27th to November 2nd, well, we got a couple I want to talk about. 75 years ago this week, 1942, October 30th, for both of them, looks like we got I Married a Witch, which is a really cute Veronica Lake vehicle where, you know, she's it's sort of, you know, it really is just Bewitched, the movie, but Veronica Lake's really charming. We had her last week with The Glass Key, and, you know, I like her. I think she's someone who... It's not just a hairstyle, so yeah, it's really cute. And for romancy weepy stuff, we got Now Voyager, the classic romancy weepy with Bette Davis and Claude Rains and Paul Heinried, and she's a frumpy girl, and then she sort of gets a makeover, and she starts looking for love, and then there's this girl she has to adopt, and I'm not crazy about the sexual politics, but lighting two cigarettes and then handing one to someone else is pretty freaking sexy. If you smoke, you probably shouldn't. Anyway, 50 years ago this week, the other movie I'll recommend, because now Voyager's kind of girly, let's recommend something for manly men, goddammit. 50 years ago this week, Cool Hand Luke came out with Paul Newman and George Kennedy. This is such a fun movie. It's a good starting point, like if you want to start getting into older movies, you know, start with something 50 years ago. It's pretty modern looking, then you can start heading back. Cool Hand Luke's about some dudes are on a chain gang and doing chain gang stuff and having a failure to communicate, being treated like crap, and trying to eat 50 eggs, and a lot of weird, random, it's kind of episodic, but it's just really fun, real cool, and lots of gruff, sweaty men being gruff and sweaty and maybe punching each other. So I'm going to recommend that this week, Cool Hand Luke. That's it for this week. Stay classic.
Things are about to get angsty here with this music choice. Avenged
Sounds
Sevenfold's...
like eight WWE wrestler themes.
Almost Easy by Avenged Sevenfold from their eponymous album. Also new releases this week being October 27th through November 2nd, Unbreakable by Backstreet Boys.
Unbreakable.
Blackout by Britney Spears, Decoding the Tomb of Van Shebot, and Cyborg Skunks, and Noodle House by Buckethead. Jesus.
Cyborg Slunks, thank you. That Slunks, makes so much more sense.
Long Road Out of Eden, the first Eagles studio album since 1979. What? The Jonas Brothers, you'll never guess who this is by. Jonas Brothers. Everything is Fine by Josh Turner. Under the Boards by Saves the Day. Supply and Demand by Player Circle. And you'll never guess Crank That by Soulja Boy, still number one. Holy crap, I didn't know the Eagles recorded another album at all. I thought they were still publicly hating one another.
After all, I mean, the fire was reignited by jokes and Big Lebowski. It only took another, what, decade?
Yeah, but some news in this week, October 27th through November 2nd. On October 29th, Argentina elects its first woman president, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner.
Kirchner.
Madonna was in the first woman president of Argentina?
No. Sorry.
Yeah, don't cry for her.
Yeah. Be happy for her, and be happy
just
for the Red Sox.
Just like pointing out when other countries have woman presidents.
A decade ago.
Lock her up.
But the Red Sox won the World Series against the Colorado Rockies.
Yes. So this is the only time that the Rockies have ever been to the World Series. Florida Marlins got it done quickly. The Rockies still haven't done that yet. They still haven't won the big one. They've been around since 1993, so it's a bit of a drought now. But this is also notable. It's the Red Sox second World Series in 4 years, which at this point it's like, well, we know you broke the curse like three or four years ago. Now it's like, that's the way I feel, honestly. Like, I hate when teams win multiple like championships in a row because you're just bogarting them. Like, I would love if the Mets just won one World Series. Like, I don't need two in a row or
I don't know shit
two
about
in
sports,
5 years.
But when like the Cavs won the NBA, whatever,
championship.
And then they lost in the World Series, I'm like,
Guys are got something.
What the fuck? You guys are doing great.
Yeah.
Give it to Chicago. Relax. Be happy for them. Yeah. And guess what? They don't understand. And I don't understand sports fans. And that's why we're not going to talk about
I just don't understand championships because no team I've ever rooted for has won a championship.
2007 for movies. This is interesting. Martian Child with Joan Cusack and Amanda Peet.
Is this a DreamWorks
no,
movie?
No, John Cusack.
This sounds like such a DreamWorks movie. We have a Martian Child. Oh, no.
There shouldn't be a movie with Martian in the title that I'm not interested in seeing. And yet they did it.
Yeah.
Well, I went through the trailer and there were a couple points I could pull out and I just sort of went, I don't want
it. It's just like a weird kid, right?
Yeah, he's a weird kid.
He's like, and John Cusack becomes like his foster dad and he says, the kid says that he's a Martian and he like hides in a box most of the time and it's about him.
Big snorer.
Trying to coax him out and become more of a kid and then they try to take the kid away from him and like, no, I love him so much.
This was John Cusack and Amanda Peet being read their Miranda rights before going to movie jail.
And I said Joan Cusack is a slip-up. She is also in this film as
well. She is.
Wow.
Yeah,
they're always in movies together. You know, aren't there four Cusacks? Is it three or four? There's another one that's like...
starting a new Cusack conspiracy?
I'm the third Cusack. There's another one that is like one of their siblings who just like shows up in like tiny bit roles just to be like, I hung out with my brother and my sister all day on their movie
set.
Thinking
of Jeremy Piven.
Jeremy Piven.
But I'd never seen this movie, and I feel bad about it. American Gangster.
Oh, it's a good one.
I thought you were going to say the other one.
No. I'm getting to that. That one's our topper, but American Gangster.
Frank Lucas is the most dangerous man walking the streets of our city. This is my home. My country. Frank Lucas don't run from nobody.
And I have always argued Ridley Scott's job is to make movies that come out in between good ones just to give you a barometer on which to judge good things. But this looks to be, of all of his movies of the last decade, the one people really like and held up okay.
I had the same way when it came out. I was like, oh, I got to see that. And I just never got around to it. And now I should totally watch it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I really like it. It's not too Ridley Scotty. He doesn't, you know, really start, I don't know, falling back on. He's got some like tropes and some visual things he sort of over relies on sometimes, and they're just really good. I mean, it's a true story. A lot of it's fascinating. They had to take. I don't remember if they brought it. I think they mentioned the thing that's like he was smuggling heroin out of Southeast China, like in the boxes of dead Vietnam soldiers.
Holy shit.
That's a real thing that happened. And yeah, he's like one
you gotta
of the
admit,
most...
good idea.
Very clever.
Good idea.
Very
I'm not gonna
clever.
Check there.
Yeah.
And did you read the cast just now?
No, I didn't.
Denzel, Russell Crowe, Cuba Gooding Jr., Josh Brolin, the RZA, Idris Elba, and Ruby Dee.
Are you avoiding reading Chiwetel Ejiofor?
Chiwetel Ejiofor?
Chiwetel Ejiofor is also on?
Yes, he's one of the main characters. Josh Brolin, all that good stuff. And John Hawks. God, I love John Hawks.
I love John Hawks. But yeah, I mean, this is... I don't know where I want to put it compared to, like, Training Day of Denzel being, like, the bad guy. But, this one, he's way, way more likable. But he is a bad motherfucker in this. He just, like... There's a scene where he just walks into a diner and just shoots a guy in the face. And it just walks away. Like.
I do like
that's actually the final scene of The Sopranos.
It was Denzel. Stop.
I do like Denzel as the bad guy. It doesn't seem to happen very often, but having watched Fences this year for the Oscars, like he can be a real menacing dude. Mm-hmm. And I'm tired of seeing him play like a Heart of Gold assholes.
Yeah. This is some like right shooting it straight down the middle where it's like he is likable and you understand why he's doing things that he's doing, but you do not approve of them because they are very bad.
All right. I'll check it out.
Yeah,
I'm segwaying.
Okay.
Why do they call it a segue? It's either a segue or a way. This is what
the internet's whipping boy.
This is what you tuned in for, kids.
He's brave.
Oh, where'd you get the honey?
It's ours now.
He's bold.
This can't possibly work. Okay, Barry, pull the chute.
He's reaching new heights.
What happened?
I just tried to talk to these guys. Hi. Then there was a dustbuster, a toupee, a life raft exploded. Now one's bald, one's in a boat, and they're both unconscious.
Jerry Seinfeld.
I'm a terrorist.
DreamWorks B-Movie.
Jesus, B movie.
How is it like Jerry Seinfeld's done like three things since Seinfeld ended, and this is one of them.
Have you seen this?
No.
This movie is really weird.
All my friends saw it without me because I was at work, and they were like, we didn't think you'd want to see it. I was like, why wouldn't I want to see this? It looks so stupid.
We didn't think you'd be interested.
But Jerry Seinfeld is one of those few people who has made so much money in the entertainment industry. If he has one idea, everybody's like, whatever the fuck you want
to
do.
What if a bee wants to fuck a woman?
It's very, very strange because you think it's going the route of like Disney to Pixar shit, but it's a very weird film. Mm-hmm. You find it looks like ants in the beginning, and then he meets Renee Zellweger's human character, and they realize they can, oh, we can understand each other.
And there's a legal battle.
And then there's a legal battle over all the honey that Warburton have been taking from hard work this whole time. And it's not bad. It's not good either.
I've only ever watched this movie sped up every time the word bee is said.
I was trying to find part of that clip.
I was going to say, when you edit this, can you speed it up every time we say bee movie?
Bee.
When I clicked on the wrong one, 3 million views, and I didn't know I'd have the N-word screamed into my ears. I'm like, I'm not trying to find any more bee movie clips at this point. The internet has done too much merciless mocking to it. Because I did an article a long time ago on lasertimepodcast.com about product placement in animated films. It's odd and almost never happens, but it took... Hey, ever had a Cinnabon before? They're delicious. Like, Cinnabon is mentioned numerous times by name with its logo in this film. It leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But this movie is fascinating, and we also wrote about it again. I think Henry did about animated grudges that continued on film because he pitched this to Pixar, Jerry Seinfeld, and Pixar said no. And I'm guessing Jerry Seinfeld can't understand anyone saying no to him. So John Lasseter has like a plane crash to him into him in this film. He's made fun of. Animated grudge that ends up in the film.
The cycle from now on will be whatever the dumbest kids movie is, within the next decade, it will be the new Shrek on the internet. So, like, whatever the dumb kids movie, you're like, who's seeing this? There's some kid who it's the one DVD they own, their parents are putting on for them again and again and again, and in 10 years they're going to make horrible racist memes out of it.
That's what's weird. This isn't a dumb movie.
Yeah.
It's a little over kids' head.
But I don't know why it just took like almost 10 years for it to become a meme, whereas like We Are Number One, that was a way quicker turnaround
because those kids are 17 now,
I guess, you know.
I don't know either, but I have to tell you, I delight as an animation fan seeing DreamWorks 10-year-old work being mocked all the time. Shrek and B-movie, I hate.
Did Jerry show up on 30 Rock for this?
Yeah, he was promoting.
Why?
Because
why would you put good work?
It wasn't a movie he was starring in.
Dumb.
It was a movie he ushered in, like Spike Feuerstein, like one of the Seinfeld writers. He had his own talk show. He wrote this movie.
Feuerstein.
Like, it has all of his old writers. This is a movie he wanted to make, and that's why. Please look up Jerry Seinfeld bee costume, because that motherfucker went to Cannes movie festival and dressed up in a bee costume and flew over everyone on the beach because
he
owned so much of a piece of it. It was worth doing whatever he had to do to promote it.
I want to go viral.
There's another viral promo for it that I remember. I couldn't find it. I couldn't find it. It was Jerry in the bee costume, but Chris Rock, who's not in the film, or maybe has like one line, on set in a different insect costume on a windshield.
Oh, yeah, I remember that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this movie's not terrible. It's also not good.
It's DreamWorks.
It deserves everything that's
Shrek
happening.
Shrek falls
to it.
Into that too, I think.
And I forget why Jerry Seinfeld recently like hold it for ransom. If this happens, if we impeach Trump, I'll totally make another B movie.
Oh, you make B movie too.
I'll make B movie too. Like, I think you misread the internet, Jerry.
They won't love it.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to television.
Moving into television.
2007 on
Rock.
October 20th. Yes, speaking of Chris Rock, Everybody Hates Chris. The episode Everybody Hates the Bachelor pad airs. So this is a show. This show was underappreciated in its time and still is. Because it's really good. I barely ever saw it at the time because I just, was 17.
It was on one of those UPN channels that I never had.
I think it was on UPN.
Yeah.
I think it was one of the last new UPN shows.
I love Chris Rock.
Yeah, it was Chris Rock making a Malcolm in the Middle kind of, being a kid. It's basically his Wonder Years.
It was set in the past as well, right?
Yeah.
And he narrated.
He narrates it. So if we open this clip, we'll hear the intro to this episode with him narrating.
When I was 15, the only thing I wanted more than a girlfriend was to have some privacy. I didn't have a room to myself. Somebody was always home. And even when I was supposed to be alone, somebody was there.
Terry Crews. I wish I could shower with Terry Crews. God damn, I love Terry Crews as well. Jesus Christ. No, I never saw this.
That's what got him the Old Spice job.
And then it's just a really good show,
yeah,
and you can find all the episodes on Daily Motion. I'm sure they're also on Netflix or something. But then on the 30th, the next day, the finale, the first finale, because it's coming back, of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy airs, which was by
burned hot and bright and fast.
Yeah, this show was huge for a year or two.
Had a South Park with the crab people.
It popularized the term metrosexual.
Yes.
When basically it was like, hey, young men, take care of yourselves.
Yeah. Before that, metrosexuals were just people who fucked buses.
It did. It did make me find out. I watched one episode. It was like, honey, you have no idea how to shave. I'm like, there's a way to
because
the way I'm doing it hurts, and I don't do it a lot.
Yeah,
and I literally
got red bumps all over my face.
Yeah, made me learn how to go with the grain and shit like that. I thank you, Queer Eye, for that.
It taught me to buy clothes that fit. Like my dad and I would watch this show, and it was a good show. And those guys on it are fun, and some of them went on to do other stuff, and not really after a couple years. But we can hear a bit from the intro. It's a good intro.
I did not realize this song was from this show. Yeah. I hear it pop up in a lot of places when they're trying to go for this kind of vibe.
Yeah, it's usually a montage of people putting on clothes or whatever.
No idea.
But it's just a good show that, Rear Right Diana burnt hot and bright. I want to talk about October 31st.
Yes.
Woo! The not so spooky episode of Sarah Silverman Program Amen airs, where Sarah enters a romantic relationship with God. So let's play that first. There's two clips here. One of them's super weird. I forget which way I ordered them.
I didn't check out the show really until it was after it was canceled. And
I think most people
with
did.
Marijuana, it is fucking perfect. Yeah. It is subdued absurdity. That's done so well.
The only reason I was aware of this show and started watching from the beginning is because when the first episode came out, it was free to download on Xbox Live.
Jesus.
And I'm like, I'm going to watch every episode of this show because it's hilarious.
And you can do it pretty easily, 3 seasons.
Yeah. That's what got me into Community, which was on PSN, the pilot for free, which also was created by the head writer of this show, Dan Harmon, who was fired right away. We talk all about that on our Rick and Morty episode of Laser Time.
Indeed.
Okay.
Wow, Doug, what a crazy day. I learned that God has created great things like rainbows and baby bell cheese. But he also created some failures like the genocide in Darfur or the last season of 24.
So that's every episode she talks to her dog and just kind of sums up the episode. This other clip is fucked up. And I found this weird YouTube video. Let's watch it, and then because I don't even really know how to explain it.
In her 2011 feature, The Morning After, Silverman has sex with God, portrayed as an elderly black sex fiend who pleads with Silverman unsuccessfully to remain in heaven with him as his lover.
I had a really good time last night. Come to heaven with me today. You'll see the past and the future. You can fly.
Wow.
So this guy is some crazy, Shiite Catholic Christian guy who,
he's, I'm going to go with Greek Orthodox because Greek it's subtitled in Greek. Definitely Orthodox.
Does that explain why he has a kid in play hat?
He's got a weird hat with a cross.
He's also
on
got,
it.
Castlevania Dracula killing cross.
When I found the clip, I was like, I saw the title, but then I was like, wait, is this guy like an Orthodox, what's he doing? What side is he on? And it's this guy that's weirdly rocking back and forth while talking about Sarah Silverman. He says this episode is a feature and from 2011. It's not. It's an episode of Sarah Silverman Program from 2007. And he just goes on, and he plays the clip of Sarah Silverman explaining how if she could kill Jesus herself, she would totally do it. And that really upsets him from her stand-up.
Let's just say the title of the video is blaming all of the Jews for mocking Jesus. We just skipped ahead to killing him. Duh, we didn't make fun of him. That was the Romans.
Yeah, but
all the Romans. That was a joke.
If you just search the title of this episode, that's one of the first clips you'll find. It's weird. I watched almost the whole thing.
I did disappear into a 10-minute clip. Did we play it on this 302010 for Wonder Chosen? When episode where they eat God, and end up eating God, and a pastor somehow not only discovered it, taped it, and plays it in front of his parishion, pausing it and yelling in between, and it's fucking hysterical.
Yeah,
it's wonderful.
That's, I don't think you.
I'm gonna go on a down a rabbit hole.
Gotta get God on the phone. He's gonna be real angry.
I want to find deeply religious people offended at great comedy. God damn it.
Anyway,
why is he blaming all the Jews for this? Why isn't he just blaming that one Jew for this?
A couple of Jews.
Who represents the Jews better than Sarah Silverman?
That's true. I don't have a problem with that. But oh man, I hate like. Anytime some white fucker does something bad, no one says, this is what you get from white people.
White people cannot be terrorists.
You cannot. Oh, you shan't trust those Lutherans. See what they do? They robbed a liquor store.
That's true, though.
Man.
Lutherans and Baptists. Just and I, don't talk to them.
I'd always like to think in the promotional shots for Sarah Silverman's show, she's dressed as Steven Universe.
Yeah, she's always.
Knowledge that way before it existed.
She's always supposed to be, because she's supposed to be like childish. Mm-hmm. And it also gave probably the biggest role of Lauren Silverman, right? Like, mm-hmm. she's had a ton of stuff.
Except for Dr. Katz. Dr. Katz. Yeah.
And I'm sorry that her character in Dr. Katz was totally sexy and seen every episode of Sarah Silverman's show with being kind. I was like, this is awesome.
I mean, I had a big crush
on... We were all
on...
Ben Katz with that show. Yeah. Like, oh, what... oh, come on.
Super.
She's beautiful and she's being nice. This is so cool.
Yeah. And then the next night, November 1st, the episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, The Gang Gets Whacked, parts 1 and 2 airs. Let's play. This clip, we can play this as long as you want, but I'd like you to let it play.
Oh, I love this show.
Hey! Let's do it. We need the talkies. Huh? Oh, shit.
Three
are you guys gangsters?
Mobsters.
Shut up!
Give me a Coke. Listen, rumor has it that somebody that works at this bar found a certain something that belongs to us.
A certain something which may or may not have fallen off a certain truck, huh?
And a certain somebody that we know thinks they saw that certain someone pick it up and take it back to that certain bar, which may or may not be the place that we happen to be, or not be, talking to a couple of certain somebodies right this very second. Agabish.
Huh? Fellas, we're about 6 beers deep, so I think you're going to have to be a little bit more clear, because I didn't get that last part.
I missed out on the whole thing, to be honest with you. I was confused by it. I was very confused by the whole thing, to be, if I'm being honest.
Look. Why don't you just return what belongs to us, or pay us the 25 G's that it's worth, and we'll be square.
Who's gone until Friday, huh?
What happens on Friday?
Oh!
Well, Friday is a day that we may not be forced to chop your limbs off and distribute them evenly amongst your friends and your family. And that's Friday.
Diana, where was the establishing shot for that scene?
Oh, gosh. Was that...
it's like a highway.
Was it South Street?
It was the Italian Market.
Oh, it was the Italian Market.
Yeah, in South Philly. Philly landmark, the Italian Market. Full of dudes like that, for real.
Yeah.
And that's a great two-part episode where because they accidentally discover like a huge amount of cocaine, mm-hmm. and then the mobsters want the cocaine, and they end up pretty much doing all the cocaine in an effort to get it back to them, and then they all buy guns. And then the same night, another two-part episode airs, an episode of My Name is Earl called Our Other Cops is On, which is a sequel to an earlier episode of My Name is Earl called Our Cops is On, where everybody gets together to watch a rerun of the episode of Cops they're all on. But this one, by this point, Ethan Suplee's character is working as a prison guard because Earl's in prison, so he's working to get Earl out of prison, mm-hmm. and they just happen to, when it's TV nights, their second episode of Cops comes on.
It's an important week. It's our first Independence Day since the September 11th 9/11 attacks.
Thinking sponsored by Bargain Bag, win a bus trip to Ground Zero, see firsthand what Saddam Hussein did to our country. America!
So just like the first 4th of July fair after 9/11, because that's when their previously recorded Cops is set. Who was that cop, Chris?
I don't know.
That was Michael Malley.
That was Michael Malley.
Oh, yeah.
Host of Guts.
Oh, yeah.
The sad gay dad from Glee.
Could not see
that. He's not gay. His son's gay.
Yes. I love my live gay son.
I cannot believe that My Name is Earl might go down in history as the most famous thing Jason Lee's ever done. I love that dude much in Mallrats.
Chipmunks. My Name is Earl is a great show. I feel like it's very underrated.
It's real damn good.
Yeah.
It is Scientology the show, which is a problem. Everyone on the show is a Scientologist, and it's about the tenets of Scientology.
That can't be.
Dude,
that's
look an onion.
That's a fucking cracked article gone wrong. I'm not going to be a part of spreading that.
But there's another clip if you want to play it that just kind of sets up what they're all doing in the Cops episode, and it's funny.
Hold on!
going now?
Officer, she's crazy. You gotta do something now.
You gotta do something. Like, provide for me. I'm the queen. You are the worker bee. Your job is to feed me, do me, and die.
Ma'am. Okay.
And she is amazing on that show. She gives one of the best TV performances maybe ever. What is her name?
Jamie Presley.
Yeah.
Oh, she's fun.
Star of Dead or Alive.
Prettiest ladies ever, star of Joe Dirt, and then ended up playing that role again for 5 years.
Yeah. Has she ever done a movie or show with the wife from Curb Your Enthusiasm? Because they seem like Cheryl Hines? Yeah, they seem like they could be sisters or mother and daughter.
I thought you were going to say Margot Robbie.
Nah.
Because they look exactly the same.
Yeah.
Do we pronounce that Robbie?
Isn't it Robbie? Is it Robbie?
I thought it was. I would have never thought anything but Robbie.
She says Robbie, but she's British. So
it's actually Margot.
She's Australian.
Margot. It's Margot, not Robbie.
Oh, she's what?
She's Aussie.
Oh, she's damn it!
I always get that wrong. You were really listening to her, man.
Yeah.
She's a great SNL host. That Scooby-Doo sketch is fantastic.
Well, moving on from Scientology to people who make fun of Scientology. This is also the week of the end of the South Park three-parter Imagination Land.
Oh.
This is where I learned, like, oh, yeah, I really don't like it when they do a bunch of themed episodes in a row. And this was originally supposed to be their second movie, but that didn't come together. So
I think
their
second movie didn't come together, and I think they sort of thought, well, why bother? Like, this venue can offer us pretty much anything, a theatrical budget.
This eventually came out on DVD. Because that's a 2007 thing. Like, Family Guy did it. Yeah. Futurama did it. Like, let's just take... Let's make three episodes that are not as good as one episode.
South Park did it a bunch, too. They just kept packaging. And like, when the superhero ones, every time they did one of those, it would be a DVD.
The one where they're in the pan flute band and there's, like, chinchillas everywhere. I forget. I mean, when they try to do a whole season, that's got a common thread that sometimes works, but also that sometimes doesn't.
I think they're at a series high right now, going back to their roots, kind of.
Yeah.
Fucking love the show now. But that is television for the October 27th and through the November 2nd of 2007.
Big week for games.
And a huge week for games.
Yeah. So, Guitar Hero 3, Legends of Rock, which is the last Guitar Hero... It's the last Guitar Hero game that only has the guitar.
I believe it's the best-selling version of that game. Yeah. It's the apex of
it. It's great.
Yeah.
It's a
great
game.
It's just
Rock Band is way better.
Yeah. This is like... I think Rock Band's either... out in a few weeks or has come out.
But I think it was out on every single platform imaginable, and I think it's one of the best selling games, if not of the year of all time.
Yeah, and this will be the subject of a South Park episode in a few weeks. Also out the B-movie game. The Simpsons game. No, the Simpsons game. Napoleon Dynamite the game, which I think we got to stream soon because it looks like so weird.
I think it's a minigame collection.
How many times can you feed those llamas?
Why is Napoleon Dynamite a game now and not 2 years ago?
Yeah, what the fuck?
Manhunt 2, which was famously, I think it's only on the Wii. It was supposed to be on the PS2 as well, but they canceled it, and they censored the...
Well, they classified it as adults only, meaning it can't be carried in most Walmarts or Best Buys.
So they had to censor the killing scenes
in
that game.
You can obtain it now uncensored and unrated on
Steam. Is it like a hot coffee thing where you gotta cross some wires?
The game is really stupid.
and unsettling. The first Manhunt is unsettling, but it's also pretty cool. Especially because if you play that game with an Xbox headset, the director tells you things through the headset, and that's just so freaky.
All right, Dave, we worked in games. I found an interesting factoid.
About what?
About B-Movie. Published by Activision. Can you guess who developed it?
Telltale.
Infinity Ward.
No.
What?
Beanox. Beanox, baby. That's a joke for like two people.
The best Spider-Man developer.
That's not a joke. That's an actual fact.
Yeah. No, we believe it.
Also out this week, the original Witcher, Time Shift, Virtua Fighter 5, and Viva Pinata Party Animals.
Oh, yeah.
The Simpsons game.
Another industry story. We all got criminally sick at a huge party for Time Shift.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Every single person in the office got like hallucinating fevers from that party.
What did
I thought you
going
to say? I thought you were going to say you ate too much candy at the Viva Pinata party.
No. You don't get invited to those first party parties.
But I mean, the game resonates with me the most this week is the Simpsons game, which we streamed for a long time.
It's
maybe our longest stream
because
ever.
Because it's nuts. Inside the Simpsons game is a really, really good couple of Simpsons episodes.
Yeah,
it's widescreen before the show was widescreen.
Yeah, it was weirdly supposed to come out, I think, probably the same time as the movie, but it didn't need it because it has nothing to do with the movie, really. But it is.
But the game is fucking terrible. Like every single second of it is awful.
But the yeah, the cutscene's real good, and I included one of them. The voice acting, the most gamey cutscene in the game.
Me too.
You're all right, old weird version of me.
Attention, Smooth Simpsons. We've been around this complex for a long time, and bring a warning. Cowabunga.
One day, your video game, too, will be obsolete.
No way. The Simpsons game is awesome. Just because every video game up until now has been destroyed and forgotten doesn't mean ours will be.
Bart, she's right. I mean, I'm right. We're both right. No video game is safe from an industry that's always chasing the hot new thing. Sure, the Simpsons game is great with its unique upgradable character abilities and its hilarious self-referential cutscenes. But what about when the Xbox 720 comes out or the PlayStation 4? Yeah.
But that's weirdly predicting the future.
I actually had the scene right before that because everything about the game is awesome other than the gameplay.
Yeah, and that's a scene, so just to paint the picture, it's the Simpsons talking with 8-bit Simpsons.
Because...
Inside,
not only like, and this is a spoiler, but because I've still my save corrupted, mm-hmm. the game sucks. Yeah. The last level, you fight Matt Groening, who sends out Futurama minions to fight against.
This
the
is
Simpsons.
Right after you meet Will Wright.
Will Wright,
developer.
Creator of SimCity, is a boss in the Simpsons game. He voices
nice.
Himself, and that's the clip I got. It's the one right before this, where they meet their pixelated 8-bit versions, and I just love the catchphrase.
Video games are about what's new, and the old is better off forgotten. Any of these fellows look familiar?
Wow, we look so pixely.
And poorly rendered. Which one is supposed to be me?
Don't destroy them. They may be obsolete, but they're still alive.
Help, it's crazy.
If he destroys us, we'll never escape from Krusty Island. I'm Marge.
Will Wright's floating on a Sims gem.
Yeah, it's all
Marge
really
was Daisy before Daisy was Daisy.
And probably the last, like, if not for South Park, the game at Ubisoft, like the last really, really big AAA TV show game, especially that it wasn't supposed to coincide with anything. It doesn't relate story-wise to anything.
I think they wanted it to come out at the same time as the movie.
I know, but it is still a standalone. I think the gameplay is some of the worst. A lot of things that's a lot harder to forgive for 10
and
years
And it's
later.
Like, it makes the joke like, hey, isn't this a boring side
fetch
mission?
Quest. Yeah, no, this like, still sucks, Homer.
Yeah, you can't make the joke and like have a like, excuse it. Yeah.
They infiltrate EA, and the EA sends out fucking Madden football players to attack them. It's really clever and really funny. Too bad it's locked in a terrible game, but I would recommend, if you're a Simpsons fan, lock that shit down. This will never be available again. Yeah. Ever, ever, ever. If you can find it, keep it. And that is it for games, baby. Yeah. If you didn't know, 302010 and a bunch of other shows on the Laser Time Network are all crowdfunded. Like 99% crowdfunded. And we do appreciate that. It helps us do this full time for a living, keep paid, almost in health insurance, but we're not starving. And we appreciate anything you can give us. We do give a bunch of bonus stuff to our patrons, including full-length movie commentaries that we do live with them, live game streams, an exclusive show every week, tentatively titled Bonus Time for almost 150 episodes. Mm-hmm. But we will also, to cut down on the length of this show, your comments that you leave underneath the show are fucking amazing. We love your anecdotes. We encourage you to tell us what you were doing during this time period or how you experienced these things we talked about. Or maybe even go more in-depth over things we glossed over because, hey, you know better than us. But we have a whole show bi-weekly where we celebrate those comments on patreon.com/lasertime. You can listen to it any way you listen to your podcast for the support of $5. That's every other week we'll have a show for you. But here's one of the comments this week. Giant Robot Conquers the World drops some science on Jerry Van Dyke's TGIF career, saying, so when you guys were mentioning You Wish and Teen Angel, I was sure you were setting up a joke. Dave kept saying he liked Jerry Van Dyke, and at least he played Grandpa on You Wish. Let me explain. Teen Angel lasted longer than You Wish. You Wish was canceled quickly, and most of its episodes were burned off in the summer. Teen Angel was on TGIF and retooled as it aired, and one of those new characters was Jerry Van Dyke as Grandpa. Yes, Jerry Van Dyke played a grandpa on two different simultaneously airing TGIF supernatural sitcoms. Holy shit. Who did he have pictures of? That's insane.
His brother. Disney. God. Weird.
That's insane. And another quick plug I wanted to get out. If you go join our Facebook community, a bunch of people just like you, awesome people, we do an annual gift exchange. Time is running out for that. I think the expiration date is November 1st, but it's really awesome. You sign up for this thing. with a bunch of cool people, and I think you buy each other gifts under $20, and random shit will just show up at your house from people who are cool. And you'll be getting a present from me as well. One somebody selected at random.
Wow, I love somebody draws me. Maybe get me the Simpsons game.
It's done through Elster. It's a lot easier than it sounds. You can just get something on Amazon.
Brett Elster?
check it out on the Facebook community. You got to search that in Facebook. And you know, if you're really cool, we'll let you in. That's it. That is it for the show. That's my plug. What else do we have to plug? Jesus.
We got Vigigame Apocalypse, just show about Vigigames. So much with the Vigigames, which, I mean, we blow through them pretty fast here, I think. So more in-depth stuff and top fives and all that. And I'm on Twitter talking classic movies at LeCineNerd.
Laser Time is the flagship podcast of this network. We're doing a Halloween-y series right now because it's Halloween times. We talked about Freddy Krueger's musical moments. We talked about Halloween sitcoms. We talked about weird horror sequels.
But yeah, we have a bunch of other fun stuff in store for Halloween. And Elm Street Nightmare, a seasonal show all about A Nightmare in Elm Street with my buddy Lizzie Cuevas. I've had a lot of fun doing it.
I think
that.
At this point, you're where the series gets real weird.
Yes. Yes. The weird last three.
Yeah.
Final three movies are insane. And we're not doing the remix. So there. But as always, we got to close out with the deaths, Diana.
Yeah, so last week was thin on deaths. This week, I guess they were all waiting for this week because 1987, we lost Joseph Campbell. He was 83.
Oh, he met the goddess.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, he was called on a quest. He refused the call to adventure, and then an old man came and told him he was chosen.
You're going to have to explain all this to me.
Okay. Hero's journey, Dave.
Yeah, he was a writer who wrote a book like Hero with a Thousand Faces that laid out the prototype adventure story. Like, think Star Wars. Star Wars is pretty much nails it, where there's a guy off by himself, and then, like, he's bored, and a mystical old man comes and tells him, you know, here, if you do this, you get this special ability, and then he has to say no, and then something bad happens, and he says yes, and they go somewhere, and he has to fight a father figure of some kind, and, you know, he's written these big, you know, pop psychology books about how, like, that's not just, you know, an American story. That's all over all kinds of literature, different cultures, relating it all to itself. It's pretty neat.
I'll just wait for the movie to come out.
All of the movies come out. Harry Potter's the same shit. Anyway, 1997, we lost Sam Fuller. He was 85. He was a director. Very manly, tough guy, kind of weird, arty movies. And I could not believe this. Anton LaVey, who's 67. Nice. But the founder of the Church of Satan died October 29th. He could not hold on two more days.
I wish they would have lied about it. Like, just don't say anything for 48 hours.
Come on, Anton.
If he would have died at 66, it would have been a lot more satanic.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe he was found on Halloween and his eyes and ears have been eaten by his cats.
Maybe.
Dark.
They're black cats.
Oh, these are spooky. And then in 2007, we lost Paul Tibbetts. He was 92. He was the pilot of the Enola Gay, the plane that dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. And the Fabulous Moolah was 84. And Robert Goulet, 73.
Vera died?
Vera died? I just stole your joke.
The Fabulous Moolah is notable because she is the longest reigning wrestling champion ever. According to WWE, she held the WWE Women's Championship for, I want to say it was like 30 years.
Whoa.
Was that because they only did one and just didn't
have anymore? Yeah, exactly. Like, she wouldn't wrestle that often, and there are a bunch of times she would lose the title in Japan that they just didn't officially recognize. But, Moolah's got a weird... She's not remembered very fondly for various reasons. One reason is that she would whore out female wrestler trainees. So,
Fabulous.
I think find out about this now.
It's one of those things where it was like, not talked about, and then when she died, it was talked about. But at least she's not Chris Benoit.
Was it consistent with her character?
No. But I mean, this is also part of her just like holding people down. Is like when you hold the title for 30 years, you pull some power trips and power plays and all that.
Well, as always, that's the desk. Diana, we have one last thing to do before we head out of here.
Oh, birthday is
the birthday quiz!
Birthday quiz time! All right, this is someone... sort of come up on this episode. Born October 29th, 1957. So happy 60th birthday.
Dennis Quaid.
No.
Michael O'Malley.
No. In Chicago, he studied art education in hopes of becoming an art teacher, but then got into college radio and worked at Second City. He has 4 primetime Emmys, 219 IMDb credits.
Denzel.
Let's go through them in order. Nothing in Common, Say Anything.
Rick Moranis.
War of the Roses.
Don Cusack.
The Client.
John Candy.
Danny DeVito.
Love Affair.
He's Canadian.
Forget Paris. My Giant.
Not Billy Crystal.
Pursuit of Happiness. Super 8. Fantastic Four. All of the Other Reindeer.
Michael Chiklis.
Hey Stan Arnold. Lee. Futurama.
Dan Castellaneta?
Dan Castellaneta.
Oh, my God. He's on SCTV, did you say?
No,
he worked at Second City.
I was thinking SCTV. I'm Jesus Christ.
That's what you think, John Candy.
Yeah.
Who's not from Chicago.
God damn it.
Happy birthday, Homer.
I didn't get
Homer
one.
Homer is 60?
Homer is 60.
That
Homer
seems 60. Low to me. I thought he was older than that. Because, I mean, that show's been on for 30 years.
That show will not end unless Dan Castellaneta says it's okay. It'll go on as long as he's willing to do it, I predict. Anyway, we will get out of here.
Blind like Mel Blanc.
We will get out of here with Do You Feel Me by Anthony Hamilton from American Gangster. We will see you guys next week when we talk all about November 1987, 2007, and 1997 in a different order.
Do you feel me? Do you read me? Tell me, am I getting through to you? I wanna know.